There's a couple of people still outside finishing up their drinks, but I think we ought to start because we said we'd start at 7, so we don't want to run over too much. I'm Gillian Creasy. I've got the honour of chairing this meeting on behalf of the Sheffield Guantanamo campaign. I'm a city councillor and I'm a member of the Green Party, and I've been involved in the Sheffield campaign over the last few years, mostly going to the vigils. We have a monthly vigil on the 11th of each month. The first announcement I have to make is that, very unfortunately, Moazzam Beg hasn't been able to come this evening. He's actually ill. I don't know exactly what's wrong, but he's been in hospital and he sent a text message. "Hello, my sincerest apologies for not being able to turn up this evening. I'm still under heavy medication after being in hospital. Best wishes to you all, Moazzam." So doubtless we shall hear more what that's about, but I hope he's well, or getting well. So that means that the main focus of the meeting is going to be on the Omar Dagaz campaign, and we've got visitors from Brighton who've made their way up here, long 5-hour journey I think, and got here sort of an hour ago, so welcome to them. So we have Jackie Chase, who's organising the campaign in Brighton, and then members of Omar's family. We have his brother Abu Bakr and his mother Zara and his niece Aisha. So later on we may hear from all of them. But I think we're going to start with a video. Is that what you want to do first? Which is for about 20 minutes. And then we'll have speakers. And then obviously it will be open to questions. And I always find that's the most interesting bit, when people ask questions and we really get into the nitty-gritty. So I'll leave it for that and then do more announcements or whatever later.
Hello, my name's Jackie Chase. I'm from the Save Omar campaign. And first of all, we wanted to say on behalf of everyone at the Save Omar campaign, we're so sorry for what you people of Sheffield have been through in the last few days with this flooding and everything. And I hope you're not suffering anymore. And thank you for inviting us to come and speak to you tonight. I feel the film has given you quite a bit of information about the background of Omar's story. The film is now, 9 months old. It was commissioned by Al Jazeera, so it has been shown all over the world by Al Jazeera International and across the United States as well. And if anyone would like a copy of the film, I can have, if you'd like to show it to a group that you're working with, or just some friends or whatever, thanks. I'd be happy to forward one on to you if you give me your address. Or you can download it on the internet from Blip TV. If you Google Omar Dagaz, the search for justice, it will take you straight to Blip TV and you can watch it again, or you can burn a copy for yourself. Yeah? So what I propose to do is to take you through some of the actions that need to happen, things that are going on right now to try and help Omar, the things you could get involved in as individuals or as the Sheffield Guantanamo campaign. And out of that, I'll bring the film, I hope I'll bring the film up to date for you as to where we've moved from where we were at that point, and then between what Abu Bakr has to say and Sora's going to speak, and the questions and answers, you know, anything else we haven't filled you in on, we should be able to bring out. Yeah. So, I mean, reeling off a list of jobs, which was my plan, the most important thing, please, for everybody to do right now is to write a letter to Omar. His address, you can have on any of these leaflets here, or it's on our website. Omar is prisoner 727, hence our 727 badges and our 727 t-shirts, yeah? And he is at 160 Camp Delta, Washington DC, 20053 USA. Because all the letters have to go through censorship at the Pentagon before they go to Guantanamo. Don't attempt to register your letter, it'll just bounce straight back. Yes, we have no way of knowing for sure that the letters do get through, except that Omar makes an effort to reply to every letter he possibly can, and his lawyer, Clive Stafford Smith, does say that the letters make an enormous difference in lifting his morale and in making the guards at the EDFs at Guantanamo Bay aware that the world is watching what is happening with Omar. So please, please write him a letter. It doesn't matter what you say in it. Some people just send him a postcard of Middle England every once a month. Other people tell them all about the grandchildren or whatever. But it's just it's a human touch, just to keep in touch with them and tell them the world is watching here. The next thing is we're very anxious that in this sort of period of political limbo between Blair going and Bush is in power, yeah. Brown, mini Bush, is taking over, that they might try and slip these detainees out to their countries of origin. Well, as Clive explained in the film, there's no question that Omar would face the torture and or death if he was returned to Libya. And there are many examples of people who have been literally shot as they came off the plane when they'd been returned to Libya. So we need to appeal to the Home Office, to the new... did we have one? Did it happen today? Home Secretary? They've announced it. Oh, well, we need to go on to Jackie Smith, whoever Jackie Smith is, and say, would they please uphold Omar's British residency and his right to remain indefinitely in this country. When the case went to the High Court, you saw the High Court, where the High Court was being asked to rule that the Foreign Secretary's position in saying that they weren't able to act on behalf of the British residents because they weren't allowed to give consular assistance to them or appeal to the Americans for them because they were British residents as opposed to British citizens. The judges in that case, at the stage of the appeal, said that that would be a very difficult position to defend, given that the men had been held against their will. And the other thing, of course, about Omar's residency status is that Omar had applied for his citizenship and had paid for his citizenship. And Abu Bakr has the receipts and all the paperwork for that. He reached the stage where they'd asked him to come for an interview, and the family had been in touch and said, our son is actually out of the country on a business trip for Tesco's, trying to sort out this organic fruits deal at the moment. And the response he'd had from the Home Office was, that's no problem, just tell him when he returns to the country to get in touch, he must have this interview. So please do write to the Home Secretary and ask him to, you know, give you an assurance that he is going to uphold. It would make a huge difference if the British government said they were prepared to receive him home. Our major problem is with the British government. It's not with the Americans. It's actually with the British government. Would you also please write to... I'm sorry, there's quite a bit of letter writing at the beginning of this, but it has, you know, made quite an impact. So for all... I say that I think we've done nothing in the last 2 years with the campaign and the film. No, I don't mean that we've had no influence at all. We are being listened to, and you know, there are conversations going on behind closed doors, which have not been happening for the other detainees. They were not happening before we started the campaign. So it is worth all this plodding along with the letter writing. Please write to the Foreign Secretary and please ask them to appeal to the Americans to return these men to British jurisdiction immediately. We don't need, you know, although even Clive Stafford Smith says that he believes that Omar is innocent, and when his case comes out, it's going to be seen to be one of the worst travesties of justice in recent years. None of us on the campaign feel that we can take a position of declaring Omar's innocence or guilt, because we don't believe that we're above the law, unlike George Bush. We feel that he needs due process, that he needs to answer any charges that are against him, and if there are any charges against him, and have a fair trial if there aren't any charges against him, and, you know, serve a sentence if he needs to. If he doesn't need to, then he should be free to go with his family. Although I would reiterate that there are no charges against him at this time. Would you also please write to the British Embassy in Washington? Recently, we sent Des Turner, Omar's MP for Brighton East, to Washington to find out what he could and to appeal to the Americans one-to-one on behalf of his constituent. And when he went to the British Embassy, they said that, of course, without the British government's instruction, they could not actually make appeals on Omar's behalf for his return to British jurisdiction, but that they were talking to the American authorities about Omar's case. and they said that it would help their cause very much if they were being appealed to by the British people to say, what are you doing? Why aren't you getting in touch with the Americans? Because at least they could report that back to the British government, that the British people were wanting them to act. Could you speak to church leaders locally and ask them to get involved? There's a few good things going on at the moment. We've recently been invited to talk at quite a few interfaith meetings, both locally and for the whole of East and West Sussex. And we were at Worth Abbey only a couple of weeks ago. And the churches in Wales have got together a petition. And the two archbishops of Wales and the moderator of the Presbyterian Church in Wales are doing a public signing of a petition that's got more than 2,000 names on it for Roma on the 16th of July, which is being presented at 10 Downing Street on the 18th of July. But it is worth getting these people on board. Obviously, many of the men that have been detained in Guantanamo Bay have been tortured and abused, and if they didn't have pre-existing medical conditions, they certainly have medical scars now. And many of them were participated last year in a hunger strike. The legality of the behaviour of the doctors in force-feeding those men on hunger strike is highly questionable. And Dr. David Nichols, who's a consultant neurologist at Birmingham, has taken the doctor who was in charge of the medical section at Guantanamo at that time to court on the American mainland. That doctor is in fact working in Washington now, pen pushing and wearing a very nice medal for his services for his country at Guantanamo Bay. But he still has to face this court case with Dave Nichols. And Dave Nichols has appealed to the British, have the endorsement of the British Medical Association and of the American Medical Association. But there's a lot that the doctors can do, doctor to doctor, writing to doctors at Guantanamo and writing to their colleagues in the States and saying, do you realise that the behaviour of your colleagues at Guantanamo is illegal and appalling? There's a case come out only the last couple of days. I don't know if you guys have had the emails of a man who's had three heart attacks in Guantanamo. Two at Bagram, once at Guantanamo Bay, once during interrogation. And he has a family history of congenital heart disease, and he's 59 years old, and most men in his family tend to die before they're 65, and the medical care that this man is not getting is not at all sufficient for his needs. I've got more details of the case over there, but if you'd like to take a copy of that and show it to your doctor and say, would he like to write to the doctors there? Apparently, medical treatment and pain relief and treatment in general for actual health as opposed to force feeding is very much given when people are cooperative in answering questions during interrogation the way that the authorities want them to be answered. It's almost like a sweetie or a favour that you can have your medical treatment if you say come up with the right answers to the right questions. And this needs to stop. These doctors are accountable. They're accountable to their Hippocratic Oath. They're accountable to the medical associations that they signed up to when they qualified. Omar, of course, was blinded in one eye during his time in Guantanamo Bay. And it's another thing that we try to point out whenever we're writing letters, that we have no assurance whatsoever that his eye is receiving the proper care. We do know from his lawyer that the eye is now milky white and photophobic. Light sensitive is what I'm trying to say, which is it causes him great pain that the lights are on in his cell 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and that for quite a while he didn't even have an eye patch on that eye. But we when we tried to insist that our independent doctor be allowed to visit Guantanamo to assess the condition of the British residents, Tony Blair answered on the floor of the House of Commons that he saw no need for a British doctor to visit at this time because the International Red Cross was supplying a doctor. But of course, the International Red Cross's doctor is not allowed to report back on the condition of the detainees in Guantanamo, so that any information about them is going nowhere. We have no way of knowing what's happening there. Now, there's a law called the Frank Pledge, which is a law that predates Magna Carta. It's one of the things that goes back to the time when people used to be organised into tithe groups for taxing, which was a group of 10 or 12 people. Now, this law is alive and kicking, and it's only sort of just come up in the last 3-4 weeks that we can actually do something with it. Thanks to the work of James and his wife Gillian down at Dorchester, who looked into this Frank Pledge thing, basically because they had the idea that they wanted to adopt one of the detainees as the Dorchester Guantanamo campaign. They looked into something like the Canadian system of the sponsorship, and they found, lo and behold, this Frank Pledge thing. Frank Pledge is spelled FrankPledge. Now, what is required for Frank Pledge is a group of 10 to 12 people agree to adopt one of the British residents that's in Guantanamo Bay, which means that they will be financially, legally, in every way responsible for that detainee. Now, more facts need to be looked into. We've got a lawyer in Brighton that we're asking to look into, like, the practicalities of that. Does the detainee actually have to come and live in your house? Or almost already got a house? Or is there a limit on the period of time that the people in the group have to be committed to the Frank Pledge? But certainly the Ilminster group are doing one. We're doing one in Brighton for Omar. Dorchester has adopted Ahmed Ben Baka, who used to live in Bournemouth. There's no reason why Sheffield, and we're hoping you will, adopt one too. And the first thing is to look into it and form your group. Ideally, I would say, with a local lawyer that can keep you on the straight and narrow with how you go about it. And then you write your letter to your detainee, inviting them to be adopted by your group. And if they accept, you can then proceed from there. But we can get this going all across the country, that even though this country won't take responsibility for these men, men and women, brothers and sisters all over this country will put themselves on the line for these men to get them back. This, interestingly enough, one of the most recent uses of Frank Pledge was to get Prince Philip into this country because he was Greek and he didn't have a job. So people had to get Windsor's and people had to get together to get him in. And it's still being currently used this year. There's a Channel 4 documentary maker called Julia Guest down at Bristol. And whenever she has people, she's a journalist, obviously, has people in that she's working on the film or something, she arranges Frank Pledge groups to look after them while they're coming in. So, I mean, as Clive said, it's going to be public opinion that's going to do it. It's going to be embarrassing this government into acting that's going to do it. So let's see if we can make that work. Now, Paddy O'Keefe, who saw in the film, and I very much want to go to Washington because we want to work with our colleagues from Stop the War and Families Against, Military Families Against the War in the States, and we want to go and be interviewed on things like the Jon Stewart programme, the Daily Show. We've got a lot of doors of congressmen that we want to knock on. We want to meet the opposition and find out what their thinking is, why they aren't pushing to get these men returned to the UK. We need to raise awareness in the US of how the rest of the world sees the US in being complicit in torture and abuse of people. And we need the money to go on the trip. So can you fundraise for us, please? We badly need to get over there. We'd really like to get over there the first week of September, because of course Congress is closed for August now, and we're not going to do it before then. So we'd like to get over there first week of September. On Wednesday, the 4th of July, which is American Independence Day, and it's also 2000 Days of Guantanamo Bay, we're having a public meeting in the House of Commons. Would you please invite your MPs and tell them that you'd like to hear from them after they've attended it? The meeting is happening, it's an exhibition at 6:30 and speakers from 7 until 9. The exhibition consists of 20 A2 portraits of the detainees with A4 bios beside them. And then there are 20 comments that go along with that about against torture, against detention without trial, against this kind of indecent treatment of men, basically, which from Harold Pinter, from George Monbiot, from Nelson Mandela, from all sorts of people, Desmond Tutu. This forms an art exhibition which has a piece of digital art from a guy at Brighton University in the middle of it. The exhibition's being launched on Wednesday night, and it will be exhibited there. And then it's free to go travelling around the country, and obviously to raise money for local campaigns. So if you can find a venue to hold this exhibition here in Sheffield, then that would be great. It's going to Chapel Royal at Brighton, it's going to Birmingham City Library, it's going to the Cardiff, the Parliament building in the Welsh Assembly in Cardiff. So if you can find somebody to put it up here, we'd be delighted to trundle it up the road to you. Yes, it's quite light in itself. The photographs are all on 3mm, and the bios too, a 3mm foam board. So it's really just our car load, but you'd obviously have to get exhibition stands and everything else for yourselves up here. So if you can come to the House of Commons on Wednesday night, please come. The speakers were going to be Mozambique, which is a bit worrying, poor man. There's also going to be Gareth Pearce, who also is another of Omar's lawyers, and various other people from Amnesty and Cage Prisoners and from Reprieve. There is an online petition on the Downing Street website for the closure of Guantanamo Bay. If you haven't signed that already, please do. On the 3rd of October, the appeal, which was dismissed at the High Court, now goes to the next stage, which is to the Lords. We've been told that there's not a lot of point in lobbying Lords because it won't actually be the House of Lords that will hear the appeal. It will be our committee of the Law Lords that will actually hear it, and that we might actually cause more offence than it's worth to try to lobby Law Lords because they see themselves very much as acting within the precise things of the law. But we'll probably be doing a demonstration outside. We truly hope that the Law Lords are going to come down on our side. If they don't, the next place of appeal for the legal case is the European courts. And cases at the European courts at present are taking up to 6 years to be heard. So it would be a real blow if it goes to there. I don't know how many of you saw the film Taking Liberties, which featured the Omar campaign in it. But we're really campaigning to try and get the Taking Liberties film into the multiplexes rather than just into independent cinemas. And the way to go about that is to write to your local multiplexes and to your Odeons and things and say, would you please put on this film Taking Liberties? We'd really like to see it. So something else to do. I'm very, very pleased that Sheffield Guantanamo is going to join our national Guantanamo campaign. That's great. We need all the input from people all around the country that we can get. At the moment, what it involves is, what's weekly at the moment, because we've got the big event coming up at the House of Commons this Wednesday, but normally it's fortnightly conference calls where we all talk to each other around the country. So the Sunday nights at 9 o'clock, I'll give you the number so you can click into the conference call. Yeah. Brighton Council really helped by in passing a motion whereby as an extraordinary body of people as opposed to as a city council. They called on the Foreign Secretary to reconsider, it was Jack Straw at that stage, his position in refusing to act on Omar's behalf by saying that Omar was a British resident, not a British, citizen. It was directly as a result of that that Baroness Simons agreed to appeal to the Americans on the Omar's behalf. It didn't come to anything, but the lawyers had been trying for 6 months before that to get an appointment with somebody in the Foreign Office for the lawyers and for the family to go along and talk to them and ask them to make an appeal. And they hadn't as much as had a polite response of a letter. They'd just been completely ignored, stonewalled. But when our city council put this motion up, and it was quite funny because Tony Blair was visiting Brighton that day. He was doing a black minority ethnic groups visit. But our black minority ethnic groups had all the information about Omar's case right in their hands. So, of course, when he tried to avoid bumping into us at the town hall where this motion was being passed, he walked straight into the hands of a bunch of people that had all the information about Omar's case ready for them and said, "No, we want a response to this." So maybe if your city could apply for this, do the same kind of motion, it might help. Also, I wondered if Sheffield Airport has been used at all for rendition flights.
I suppose
so. All the details of both the military and the general airports that have been used are detailed in the Ghost Plane book. You know, the flights, it was just a bunch of plane spotters that actually started the whole thing of finding the routes of these rendition flights across Europe. But it just might be worth checking in case there's anything there. But then, of course, you get onto your local police and ask them why they're allowing the flights to go through. We're doing that with Gatwick Police at the moment. We're having Gatwick Police being investigated for letting flights that had people being taken away to be tortured on board, passed through our airport. And just working with local racial harassment forums, committees for racial equality, anti-victimisation units, all of those people are willing to help and to make a case for these individuals. And it shows that we're standing up for all the citizens of our society to be treated with decency and with justice. I think I've rabbited on enough, so I'll stop there. Thank you.
Amazing. Jackie said she was going to hit us with a list of 25 things that we had to do, but I mean, in a way, it is an incredibly powerful indictment of what's going on.
Yeah.
That you've been doing all this and not shifting on this kind of basic human right. You know, I think that's as kind of eloquent a description of what's going on as anything that we might have heard, and obviously, masses of ideas there for what we might do. Incredible. I presume you've been kind of actioning all these things and asking us to kind of roll it out. Do you want to speak? Yeah, Abu Bakr? Thank you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. All praise and thanks are due to Allah, and peace and blessings upon His messengers. I thank you on behalf of Omar and on behalf of the family for inviting us to highlight the condition of our brother. As you might have recognized from the film, I do not have any previous experience in campaigning or involvement in politics. But due to what happened to my brother, I always say I regard Jackie as my mother in politics. And she has been training us to do what is very vital and very necessary at this time in this country. A bit about our background. Our late father, may Allah bless his soul, was murdered by Gaddafi because he opposed Gaddafi's regime. When we were coming to Sheffield, we had their suspicion or suspicion that there might be a flood. There's a dam which might explode and there might be flooding, and it's very dangerous. So I felt worried, to be honest, coming to Sheffield. but I thought that there's a worse flood and more dangerous flood, and that is the flood of the rule of dictatorship in the world. And this actually is more dangerous, and we should need to worry about that more than the dam breaking down and being flooded by nature. I see what's happening now in Britain is nothing more than shifting from the way of life and the good morals and justice which we enjoyed and which attracted us to this country, to the lifestyle and the rule of dictatorship. I remember when we were very young, we always had link to this country. Our late father was very ambitious to teach us languages, English, French, and various other languages. So he used to bring us, I was 8 years old, to Brighton in 1974, and put us in English families to learn English. And in the weekends, we used to go where my mother and my father stayed in London to visit our mum and dad. And the most joyous hour to my father was to take us to the Speaker's Corner in the Hyde Park on Sunday and watch these people expressing, talking their views openly, freely, in all security, no fear at all. And every Sunday it was like a form of worship. You know, I think he was dedicated to it more than Friday prayer. Every Sunday he takes us there, and he used to enjoy that those hours, and he used to tell us, this is how Tripoli should be. This is how life in Libya should be. That everybody can express what he thinks, what he believes, what he sees is right, and whoever wants to listen, listens. Whoever is convinced, gets convinced. And that's, since young age, I remember him saying, we used to visit Switzerland, other European countries, and he used to say England, or Britain, is the most just country, according to him, in the world. Its laws treat you as what you do, not what you are, where you're from, or what color you are. And this was the idea we had in mind when my father got assassinated. We had a holiday home in Brighton, and it seemed logically that the place to go to was Brighton, and we had some links, families we knew, we lived with, we had friendship with. Unfortunately, we never thought that what we saw in Libya might be repeated again. We thought we are safe, we're secure. We'll never get that feeling that we might be oppressed again, because there's the rule of law. But unfortunately, since 9/11, as a Muslim, I feel very vulnerable. What happened to my brother? So all these laws, taking away liberties, just being accused of being a terrorist or having terrorist links, you can be thrown in Belmarsh and you're not even entitled to know the evidence against you. It's not just Guantanamo. Guantanamo has just become a symbol for these places. But there are hundreds of Guantanamos. Garcia, you know, we saw a program, Romania, Bulgaria, Morocco, you know, all these places where they take people, Ethiopia lately, and they torture them, you know, and hold them without any trial, without any rights whatsoever. So I think it is very important that everybody should be active and should do something. Because how dictatorship starts, the first thing Gaddafi did when he took over by a military coup, he picketed it on the Jews. There was a small Jewish community in Libya, which lived there for hundreds and hundreds of years. They're Libyan. They speak Arabic. They are from the same, you know, same tribes, but their religion was different. They were Jews, majority were Muslims. He picked on the Jews. Unfortunately, people, you know, watched and kept quiet. And they thought, well, you know, this treatment is only for a certain small minority who are associated with Israel, although they had nothing to do with Israel. They were completely Libyans, they had no links whatsoever to Israel, but they were accused of being, because they're Jews, Israelis are Jews, then, you know, they are in support of Israel and they are our enemy, until he deported all the Jews from Libya and they had to go to Israel by force. Although most of them didn't want to immigrate to Israel because they had no link whatsoever. They were born there, their grandfathers are buried there, and they had a very good relation with the community as a whole. So people kept quiet when he picked on a small minority, you know, took all their wealth, you know, stripped them from all their rights, deported them unjustly. You know, maybe some people were happy, ignorant people. You know, others maybe weren't happy, but they did nothing about it. They didn't stand in the force of this dictator. After the Jews, he picked on what he called bourgeois, the filthy rich, or whatever. You know, who people who are, you know, like, who owned things, who employed. Again, you know, they were smaller in numbers than the middle common person, and people watched and did nothing. Until the end, you know, the whole Libya became a big prison. The feeling, you know, it's a huge prison where you can't leave the country without a visa. You need a Libyan visa to leave Libya. You know, you need at night, you know, to move from one area to another area, you might hit three, four checkpoints. You know, the prison of Bousselim, which is as Guantanamo or worse, you know, people are dumped there. You're not allowed even to ask about them. If you go and ask about a relative who's been imprisoned in Bousselim, a Bousselim prison, you'll be taken in yourself, because you're connected to him and you might be part of him, or part of his organization, or whatever he's accused of. So really, when we stand for this oppression and injustice, we are standing for our own safety. Yes, we feel for Omar and others in Guantanamo, or others in Abu Ghraib and other places, but it's very vital for our own salvation. A day might come, you know, in the Brighton Labour Conference, an elderly man who shouted nonsense to Jack Straw was arrested under anti-terror laws and interrogated, just saying nonsense to Jack Straw. You want to see, I don't know if Tony Blair has visited Sheffield lately, when he comes to Brighton, the amount of you know, policemen with guns on top of the buildings, warships, you know, on the coast, helicopters, it's frightening. You know, people keep out of the center, you know. It is a picture very similar to the picture when Saddam Hussein was traveling, or Gaddafi was traveling. Since when, you know, in this country, the prime minister was, was like this, guarded. I mean, who would target him anyway? But this gives the indication that, you know, things are shifting. I think, I keep saying, my opinion, I could be wrong, that dictatorship style has won over democracy. Now, you know, more and more the rulers in the Western world, or in so-called the democratic world, are more interested to be dictatorial, so they can reach their goals and, you know, do what they like. But this, we should not allow it to happen. And I think everybody can make a difference. I remember when Condoleezza Rice came to visit Jack Straw to his city and show her around. It was a social visit, I think. I had the honor to go and welcome her there in a Stop the War demonstration. And believe me, many people say, well, people went out in millions and demonstrated against the war. What did happen? They still went to war. It made no difference. No, it does make a difference. It makes a lot of difference. You know, I was there when she came to visit Blackburn Town Hall, and she got off this Land Rover with Jack Straw. We were standing demonstrators, you know, in a line, about 300 of us, and she was at a distance of that wall. And started walking towards the town hall. People were shouting, "Shame on you," and you know, you were shouting so many things which I couldn't even understand, but well, it, out of anger, people were shouting. She tripped and she couldn't even walk properly. You know, nobody likes to be hated. The worst, you know, evil person wants to be loved. If all of you stood now and said to me abusive words, I don't think I can be able to stand here, or I won't have the face, you know, to be with you in the same room. Similarly, these politicians, or, you know, whether it's Bush or Blair or whoever it is, you know, they, whatever we do, and when we express our anger and our disgust, what they're doing, it does affect them. When they go and sit, you know, between themselves at night in their beds, you know, these things do come to their mind, and it does give them a headache, you know, and actually, it does worry them. So I think anything which can be done in our capacity, we should do it. And we should also encourage others, you know, because rights were never given. They're always fought for. You know, people gave their blood. I mean, if the grandfathers of this country and Europe didn't fight the Nazis, you know, and didn't give blood, where would we be today? You know, the situation would be totally different. So again, you know, now it's the new cons, or whoever it is, you know, who are trying to do the same thing, you know. So it's very important, and I plead, you know, that we should try to be active and, you know, participate, and maybe it's slow, you know, but we will get there, and hopefully dictatorship and new cons will be talk of the past and will be a history, inshallah ta'ala. And thank you very much.
Zora, do you want to speak? Do you want to come in after questions?
Maybe if you speak.
You would like to.
I would like to thank everybody to invite us here, and I ask you to write to a home office. To write please to them and say, bring Omar back to England, because it's our country is here now. We no more have in Libya. That is so dangerous if Home Office to send him to Libya, because if he go to Libya, they will kill him. And that's it. And I would like to thank again. And that's it.
We can ask you if you want to, can't we? People want to ask you questions and they can direct it to you.
So, shall we do sort of half an hour of questions? Because I think we have to be out of here by, is it 8:30? It's 8:20 now nearly. So if we said half an hour, and then it gives lots and lots of time for networking and whatever. So we'll see how it goes. So should we open the floor to questions? It'd be good if you could say your name, and if you want to say that you come from a particular group or what you're interested in, that's fine, but it would be nice to hear your name and then direct questions to Jackie or Abu Bakr, or if it's just a comment, that's fine. So is there anybody who wants to say anything?
Yeah. Can I just ask, I'm Richard Howard from the Group of Humans. So there's the difference basically is citizens and residents. Yes. So how many detainees are British residents?
At the moment, there's seven left there.
And you have a list of them?
Yes, we do, yeah. They're all on our website, which I should have mentioned, which is www.save-uma.org.uk. Yeah. But it, I mean, it's just crazy differentiating between the two, because they were seen to be in need of refugee status. I mean, the Gaius family, when they came over here, it was 86. Were shown quite clearly to be under threat. It was accepted that there was a known threat to them. So how can the same government that says those people, you know, were there's a known threat to them, which is why we're letting them here, then say, but that they ought to go to the Libyans for consular assistance? It's just crazy. Yeah.
Okay, so there's a gentleman here.
I'm Chris, I'm involved with Indy Media. I was listening to a US radio show the other day on the internet, Flashpoints, which is at flashpoints.net, and they were interviewing a woman who's a former member, I think she's a military, former employee of the US government. And she said that, well, I noticed in the film earlier that it was said that he was basically bought by bounty hunters. She said that 95% of the people in Guantanamo Bay were purchased by the US government, and they were purchased for between $5,000 and $25,000 each. And that the youngest person they bought was a boy of 13.
That was Omar, not Omar de Gaius, the Omar from Canada.
Oh, right, okay, yeah. I didn't know his name. So I was just wanting to kind of repeat that really and ask if you had heard that, and if you knew, you know, I mean, how much Omar was bought for.
$5,000 was the price that we were told.
Yes, in one of the notes which he wrote to his lawyer, Omar says that the first, one of the first interrogations or meetings with the Americans, when he was in the hand of the Pakistani police, was like some sort of pricing. How much are they going to pay for this head when they take him? Which endorses what you just said, you know, that each person is weighed how much important or how much is he worth to the Americans, and then they tend to pay the Pakistani government, which, you know, Pervez Musharraf made clear that they made millions out of this, you know, cashing people and giving it to the Americans. And plus, the bounty hunters are, you know, anyone who hands in, you know, a strange-looking person, you know, an Arab or European, who was in Pakistan at that time, gets $5,000 from the Pakistani police, and the Pakistani police gets their money from the American CIA, and that's how it seemed it worked, as far as I understand.
I'm just glad to hear that somebody was outside, somebody who'd actually worked for the government, who I wasn't working for the government, was actually prepared to stand up and tell the truth about that one. Because one of the scary, I mean, because obviously that's breaking prohibition of slavery laws, that's trafficking, that's, I mean, there's so many laws that have been complicit in torture, breaking of all sorts of human rights conventions, from the United Nations ones to European ones. That is obscene, but you can see why, you know, no one from the government doesn't want these men to come back, for people to find out what they've been complicit in. But I mean, that's really scary, because it's the only way we're getting this kind of information, other than the one-off sort of lady like you were talking about, is through the lawyers. And, for example, Omar has recently had a tribunal where they've told him, the Americans claim that every prisoner has been given a dossier of what they're alleged to have done or being charged with at their tribunal, but they won't tell anybody what's in it. So the only way you can find out what's in it is to wait for when the lawyer is next granted permission to go down and see them and say, at your tribunal, what did they say was alleged against you, kind of thing. But they're now restricting the lawyers' access, and they're threatening to bring in legislation just in the next few months, which is going to mean that the prisoners are only going to get two visits from lawyers ever, just to identify who they are, to take their things. So there's going to be no chance to actually go and come up with any evidence to say, no, they didn't do this, or they were there at that time, not in that place at that time. There's going to be no chance to fight these cases, no chance to speak to them, or for them to come up with any defence for themselves.
I'm interested in the opportunities for campaigning and you've mentioned Chennai Fort, and I wondered if there are names of MPs, Men of the Lord, on your website. For instance, Helena Kennedy, who is also a lawyer. And then also the other groups with influence, you mentioned church. Are the lawyers as a body in any way on board to challenge what's happening? Was it only the bitters like doing the challenging? Because it seems like this is something, it is such an abhorrent in the law that I don't feel comfortable going to any lawyer who has not stood up and said these things are wrong. A lawyer who doesn't, is like the doctors who don't say these things are wrong, are themselves implicit in it because they have status, they have power. So I'm wondering, what are the lawyers doing? What are the doctors doing? Yes, the church, it seems, is coming on board, and people are coming on board a lot stronger. People who represent us in democracy do those things.
To find out what the specific bunch of human rights lawyers are doing, the ones that are most active over Guantanamo Bay are Reprieve and Cage Prisoners. www.reprieve.org. Cage Prisoners is a human rights organisation, but it's made up of a lot of lawyers. The main lawyer working for them is Asim Qureshi, and their spokesman, of course, is Mozambique, who is meant to be with us tonight. But you can see the whole legal case and the lawyers that are working with them. Then there's Gareth Pierce and her firm, Pierce Benberg. And basically, most of Omar's stuff, for example, is from the States, is handled by Clive Stafford Smith, who you saw in the film. But the stuff to do with legal matters to do with this country, and that the sorting out legal aid and things like that, is dealt with by Gareth Pierce and Irene Benberg from Pierce Benberg, and then Bard from Pierce Benberg, yeah? So, yes, those groups of lawyers are getting involved. Some of the MPs who have a constituent who is a detainee have been very helpful, in particular Sarah Tether, a Liberal Democrat for Brent, who is the MP for Bishr al-Rawi and Jamil Albana, has been absolutely terrific. And they're hosting our meeting on Wednesday. She's been first rate. Our own MP's been pretty hopeless, but he's eventually responded to the call. And who else? And the trouble that you'll hit is with your local MP is that your local MP will say they can't act because the person isn't in their constituency and they can't even find out answers to your questions. But, I mean, you can argue that one, that you know you have a right to know what's happening about somebody else's human rights. Or you can write to Des Turner or to any of the MPs for the detainees. I mean, who's the other woman that's been absolutely hopeless? Glenda Jackson. Amani, Abubakar's sister, lives in Glenda Jackson's constituency. And Glenda Jackson just kind of like throws her hands up in horror and says, what's she expected to do about it? Well, I'm sorry, she is Amani's, you know, representative in government, so she needs to do something. So if you know people that live in that area in her constituency, would you get on to them and say, will you do something on behalf of your constituent, Amani de Gaius, whose brother has been detained without charge at Guantanamo Bay, please? You know, that seems to be the way we can organise ourselves.
Add in on the lawyers that there is a local group of Liberty. I think Mike McColgan, who's in that group, has been sort of active in supporting meetings of the Guantanamo campaign, and they brought Sharmi Chakrabarti, who did a very good meeting here, it must be about a year ago, very much focused on the issue of human rights. I mean, it was about sort of human rights in this country more than the abuses abroad, but you know, same difference. So there is, I mean, they're not very active, but that group has got the kind of outline presence in Sheffield.
I think also the least active group, unfortunately, in this country, are the Muslim community. And I think, you know, Sheffield is one of the cities where there are big Muslim community, and all the Muslim community, like the Yemeni community. I remember I've been here in the 80s, some of them been here since the 50s or the 40s. They are children, they must be by now, you know, third generation. I can't see why. I mean, the Guantanamo was all Muslims, you know, the Belmarsh are mainly Muslims, you know, for some reason or another, you know. I think, you know, some way we should find a way to reach out to them and get them to be active, to defend themselves. It's, somehow they're so frightened. We were in the same situation. I mean, our brother was in Guantanamo, and we felt the best thing to do is to put your head down. Until Clive came, you know, after seeing Omar in Guantanamo, said to us, the only way to help your brother get justice is to speak out and stand up, you know, and come out to the public court. You know, that's the only way. There's no other way. Put the pressure on the government so that it acts, you know, and puts pressure on the Americans. So I think it's very important that as activists in Sheffield, to target the Muslim community and get them out of their fear, you know. That, listen, if you don't do, you know, if you don't come out, if you don't, you know, be active, it's going to be worse and worse, not better and better, you know.
I'm Charles Charter. Thank you, Rebecca, basically for reminding me what we were losing in this country. I mean, my dad used to take me down to Speaker's Corner when I was a kid as well, so thank you for that. I just wondering, was being naive, listening to, you talked about we're in the state of limbo, the government at the moment. Gordon Brown is banging on about change, and they had Alistair Darling on Today programme this morning failing to explain exactly what was going to be different under Gordon Brown. He's up to his neck just as deep as Blair is. Is there a chance, as a leader at the moment, if you want to show you're different from Blair, if you want to distance yourself from Blair, show how you would you run things differently from Blair, a chance to get in there and show that you're different, get these people out from Guantanamo, prove that you're a better man than Blair was? Is that a lever you can use at the moment?
I think it's worth it. I think everybody needs to write to contact Brown and say just that. He spoke in Brighton 3 weeks ago.
Brighton Festival,
We had him down at Brighton Festival, and so we were all out there in the orange boiler suits and the black coats, you know. And somebody did actually met to get a question from the floor, the very last question, because all the questions, of course, have been censored, so all those we'd sent in didn't get through. But one of our local councillors, Francis Tonks, has been a real active guy with CND and things for years. Got the last question, and it was about what would he do about Omar, and he said he was aware of the case and he would look into it. So we've obviously written to him a couple of times since, about six times since, saying, have you looked into it yet, and then what can you do? But I mean, the more people that are doing that around the country, the merrier.
There's three questions. People are putting very delicate little hands up. I can see three people. There's gentlemen over there, and then Steph, and then Noah.
Really, the question about involving the Muslim community here in Sheffield. Has the Sheffield group attempted to contact Abu Jawad, who is the president of the Islamic Society of America, who is based here in Sheffield?
Sheffield group, would you like to respond?
Yes, I mean, actually, he's been sent information about this program to our team. Yeah, I think he knows about it.
Okay, short answer there, but maybe more pressure could be applied on Abdul Gujar.
I'm Steph Howard. Just following on from the speaker before last, David Miliband is the new Foreign Secretary, and I wonder if he actually might be much more responsive than Margaret Beckett was, and worth putting a bit of focus on him.
Why do you think he'd be better?
I just wonder if he will do
half the change.
I mean, he's been quite good on the environment.
I
just wonder if he might be more responsive, and that might be.
I think there was an article in the Independent which I read. One of the high-profile Labour Party women, I can't remember her name. She's the
Harriet Harman.
She was saying that the Security Council should pass. The British government should ask the Security Council to pass a resolution against Guantanamo Bay, because if this was done by another country openly, the Security Council would have passed a resolution by now. But I don't know, she won the election as a vice Deputy. I'm not sure if she's going to stick to that or she. So it's worth it to follow up. You know, I try to remind her what she said and write to her and see what, you know, if she's going to do that, because it is a fact. I mean, if another country was, you know, doing Guantanamo openly, the security council would have put sanctions and maybe reacted in a very different manner. You know?
I don't know who your European MP member of parliament is up here.
It's Linda McCavan, isn't it? Is one of them.
So because we've got Caroline Lucas from the Greens, who's been really great, and she came with Abu Bakr and I to the ambassador to Europe in Brussels when we spoke at the Bertrand Russell peace conference at the European Parliament, and she set up a peace group up in the European Parliament, which is run by the Quakers. But I mean, she's been really great. So if your MEP would like to work with her, that'd be great. You realise that we're the only country in Europe that hasn't taken back its residents. Now, Angela Merkel was the last person to go and appeal for her Turkish resident to be taken back to Germany. It's only the British ones that are still there now. Great special relationship.
Yes, there's a point of information outside on the table. There is an amnesty urgent action on behalf of a Libyan detainee who is under threat of deportation back to Libya now. And it would be very good if as many people would take that and write for it, but also use that as a lever when appealing to our wonderful new Home Office about the danger to Omar. And you could also sign the petition to close Guantanamo Bay.
Thank you. Yes, it needs pointing out that there's information on the table out there with a petition, and there's information here.
You've got a petition too, presumably.
No, we're not. That's the petition. No. What I've got is formats for people with the information they need to include in letters to the Home Office, letters to the Prime Minister, and T-shirts that we're trying to sell, please, £8. We've run out of badges. Addresses for Omar, and we've got A4 posters to put in your front window too.
Bobby?
Yeah, just to pick up on the point that was made about the deportation back to Libya that Amnesty campaigned for, against. but I think what I'm trying to sort of do is to make a link between that and the residents in Guantanamo, and the reason why the British government isn't bringing them home. I mean, the fact that they're residents is just, on one level, you know, that's, so what? It makes no difference. I sincerely believe that actually what's trying to be set is a precedent in that sense,
yeah,
of being able to arrest people in this country and send them back to their countries of origin, yeah, if they are opposing in any way the regimes in their country of origin. Mm-hmm. The anti-terrorism laws are, the definition of terrorism is not defined to acts of, you know, atrocity like the Twin Towers or the bombings on the Tube, but it is opposing, you know, it is so wide, it is to oppose, if you oppose your any government of any kind, don't matter whether they're a dictatorship or whatever, you fall into the terms of, when I say oppose, I mean if you actively, you know, so for instance, if you were to send money for medical aid to Palestine now and it went to the Gaza Strip, which is under Hamas, there could be a link made between you and terrorism. Now, if at the moment, it's very unlikely that, for instance, at the moment, they would come and pick me up off the streets for that. But what they are doing, they are trying to make, there's a phrase that they use, to make the facts on the ground, as it were, to make a fact, is to be able to send people back to the countries that they've come, they've escaped from and are opposing, you know, in some form or other. They make no distinctions about the kind of regime that you're opposing, that, that whoever may be opposing. There's no distinction. So, and it is true that if Nelson Mandela was in prison today, to support him, you would be supporting terrorism. There's no, you can't get away from that. And that's why I believe this government is not trying to bring the, is blocking the, blocking these people coming home, because they want to be able to establish this ability to send people back. And I'll finish, sorry, I don't want to go.
Don't worry.
I'll finish, I'll just kind of wind up by saying, and the proof of that is very simple. When Mozan came back, one of the most dangerous people on earth, apart from the moment where he was interrogated when he came back immediately, where's the investigation? Where's the court case? What's going on? The Libyans who are being held under control orders in this country, like house arrest, the people we hear who have been absconding, etc., etc. There was one of them who was held in Belfast for, I can't remember, how many years, 2 years, I don't know, a year. All of that time, he was never spoken to by the police about what he had done, or was accused of having done, or suspected of having done. Why not? If this man, or these people are so dumb, why not? Because there's an experiment going on. What can they get away with? And they won't get away with it if we don't let them. Because as yet, we don't live in a dictatorship. It feels like that sometimes, but we ain't there yet.
Everything's in place, though.
Well, yes, but we can, you know, they get away with what we allow them to get away with.
It's 5 minutes to go. I'd just like to say something from the point of view of a councillor. There have been a couple of motions gone to Sheffield City Council about Guantanamo, and I think the last one did include an appeal for residents. There was certainly one about Moazzam when he came to visit, when his father came the first time on his behalf. And then I think there was another one since then which talked about residents. But certainly it could go again. You know, that would be worth doing again. The other thing that I think might be of interest, just this last week, we've had a fantastic week in Sheffield celebrating refugees and asylum seekers who are here in Sheffield. Sheffield's got a big population of refugees and asylum seekers and migrant workers. And there was a brilliant week that the City Council was very, very involved in organising, with lots and lots of kind of festivities to raise people's awareness about how these people are part of our multicultural Sheffield and how welcome they are. So that's happened. So there's a bit of a kind of groundswell of kind of good feeling about the sort of Sheffield we want to live in. The City Council's also launched a consultation about cohesion, community cohesion, which they've kind of done it very much as like, what is your personal responsibility as a Sheffielder? And as a Sheffielder, you know, we're supposed to have kind of values and responsibilities to each other, including people of all faiths and backgrounds and all the rest of it. And my feeling about that is that it has completely failed to touch on the reason that people feel sort of dispossessed and angry and excluded from society. And I would love to see a kind of response to that community cohesion strategy to say, look, City Council, you know, if you really want us to be a cohesive community, you need to be seen to be removing some of these injustices which make people feel so angry.
Yeah.
So that I'll add that as a kind of 26th point, that, you know, if you want to kind of make that link and nag your City Council to be interested in this issue, it's like, you know, if you care about community cohesion, please put some pressure on your colleagues in Westminster, because Sheffield is, well, actually it's not quite so secure Labour anymore, but you know, it's got a long history of being
a big, powerful Labour city, which should be able to influence the Labour MPs in Westminster. So I think, you know, making pressure on Labour councillors here Blunkett and asking them to... It is David Blunkett's. Yes. So, you know, I think that is kind of, it's a bit of a kind of strange link, but it also links in with kind of pulling in the Muslim community in this city and saying, you know, what are the issues you care about? What are you frightened about? What do you think about what's happening internationally? Make it count here. So that's my little splurge. One more question from Myra, and then maybe we should wind up.
We're finding people here in this room come to hear these stories and to understand them. I just think it would be very good to be able to use this body of people here to use this to approach the council. In other words, a statement from this meeting at which people who have attended, it was sent out as an email to us, mm-hmm. we could actually sign up to it and ask it to be sent to the council, and also one to the new parliament.
Have people put their name to, I think there's been a list going round, so that would be great. Yeah, and just a very simple statement to say, free Omar, bring him home.
I just wanted to add to what you were saying just now by me, that it's been really important with the Omo campaign to keep personalising. It kind of adds on to what Bobby was saying as well, to personalise Omo. This is not an enemy combatant. This is not 727. It's a great badge to wear and a great T-shirt to wear to get people to talk about it. You know, this is a human being, a father, you know, a husband called Omo de Gaius from Brighton.
Yeah. 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 Do you want to say anything to...
I just emphasise the Frank pledge thing. Was it a law? I don't know what's the Frank pledge idea. I think it seems to be whatever way it goes, it will be beneficial for the campaign, because if by law, you know, it succeeds by granting them entry to this country, that's great. If it doesn't, I think it will make a good media story, and it will actually might trigger the government to try to wipe this law in some sort of legislation, as they usually do, you know, to chuck it out of, you know, the system. So I think it's if Sheffield can manage to adopt one of the residents and, you know, give him friendship on this Frank Page thing, that would be great, because Birmingham is doing it, Brighton, Dorchester, Somerset,
Norwich is too fantastic.
So I think, you know, this would be a good, if not anything else, a good media story and embarrassment. And Clive says to us, although I'm a person who doesn't like to swear and use swearing words, embarrass the bastards. I feel shy to say that, but it's very true. Our MP, Des Turner, who's a Labour, tends not to do anything until we embarrass him and go to his surgery and push him and, you know, get the Argus to talk about it, and he has to, you know, lift himself from his seat and do something and, you know, act, you know, and this is the only way they do things. They tend to lose feelings when they come into power. They don't, you know, these human feelings seem to die or something. But embarrassing them is the best way.
Pat, do you want to say anything about collection outside?
We've got a bucket out there, which we really urge you to make donations. All the money that raised and that will go to the Save Omar campaign and cage prisoners. Yeah. So please put some money in the bucket on your way out.
We'll take checks as well.
Yeah.
So I just want to end by thanking you all for coming. It's been an amazing evening. Obviously very sad and moving, but also very, very inspiring to kind of see the work you've put in. Obviously it was disappointing that Muazzam Beg wasn't here, but I think in terms of the information that's been shared and the inspiration, it's been amazing.
He was in the film.
And he was in the film.
And just really to end with a message of hope that in, I think Mozambique came here in 2000, oh, sorry, his father came here, Asmat Beg came here in 2004 and spoke to a very big meeting in the Library Theatre. And the back end of last year, Moazzam Beg came to speak to us. And, you know, that's what we hope, that we'll be welcoming your brother here in due course.